welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And this is Brother Jay!
Aw, oh, hello sock puppet, Brother Jay.
Hi, I specifically suggested there be no sock puppetry this episode, but since I'm not here, I can't make it not happen.
It's funny, I can't do the sock puppet without actually making the sock puppet motion with my hand, which is kind of strange.
It works for me.
Yeah. So anyway, Brother Jay is absent tonight. He's got a thing. So he'll be back to tell us all about it next week. Or not.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
And and you refused to do a music episode with just me.
I did. You sent me a possibility of doing a music episode on an album that I actually think I love, but we just didn't have enough time, I don't think, to prepare for. However, it's got to go on the calendar.
That wasn't really fair of me because I've actually been listening to it the past week.
It'd be a fun episode, though.
Yeah, I think it will be.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it next time. Brother Jay is scheduled to be absent.
Okay.
That's definitely an album he will not want to do.
Yeah, maybe not. Okay, cool. Well, then that's on the calendar. We won't even give away the surprise.
No way, man.
But tonight, we're doing the film Insomnia, a 2002 film directed by Christopher Nolan. We're starting off our deep dive into Christopher Nolan films with maybe his best work.
Yeah?
No, I don't know. It's a fine film. This is your pick.
We've already done Memento.
That's true. So take it away, Drew. Tell us about Insomnia. Why is it on our list and why are we watching it?
This was a movie that I was interested in seeing originally because an old show that some of our younger listeners may not remember called At the Movies with, I think it was Ebert and Roper at the time. They would sometimes talk about like a random foreign movie that one of them was passionate about. One of the reasons I like that show so much. And they talked about either a Swedish or a Norwegian film called Insomnia with Stellan Skarsgård. And they described it a little bit, what the plot was about and the mood of it. And I really dug it. I was into it. But at the time, I was in a place where finding foreign movies was not all that easy. That was pre-Netflix. So, yeah, I that was one I always had in the back of my head to watch. And then a couple years later, it came out that the dude who had done Memento, which I loved when that came out, that he was going to do an American remake of Insomnia. So I got pretty excited about it, and then I found out it was going to star Al Pacino, which was cool, and Robin Williams, which was pretty bonkers at the time. So I was excited to watch it when it came out. I didn't see it in the theater, but I definitely checked it out when it first came out on video. And I was really surprised about what type of movie it was. I was expecting one thing, and it definitely did not deliver on my expectations. But I thought it was good. It wasn't a movie that I really wanted to watch again right away. But I had an interesting experience rewatching it for this discussion.
Yeah, so it was actually a 1997 Norwegian film. And this was produced in 2002. So I think, I know I watched it on video. I didn't see it in the theater. And I wasn't sure what I was getting either. And I think we need to talk about the elephant in the room first. We live in Alaska. We were born and raised in Alaska, The town of Anchorage. So whenever I go into an Alaskan movie, I have to consciously unhook my irritation for maybe continuity problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you been to Night Mute?
No, I have not.
Do you know where Night Mute is?
Nope.
Night Mute is just down the block from Bethel. Have you been to Bethel?
I have not been to Bethel.
Okay, well, I checked with listener Connie and her husband Chris. They are both pilots, and Chris has flown around Night Mute. And he will tell you a couple things, one of which, there are no trees. So therefore, there's not a thriving logging industry.
Yeah, it looked more like Ketchikan.
Exactly, because it was filmed in British Columbia.
Yeah.
Which is a perfectly good facsimile for Ketchikan, or Juneau, or Sitka, or any of those.
Any Southeast Alaska.
Yeah. But, of course, you know, the thing about Alaska is a very big place, and it's hard to wrap your brain around, because if you want to just, it's probably like Australia. You want to, if you want to set your film in Australia and you've never been to Australia, you put every part of Australia you can think of all in one spot. And that's what they did in this movie. You've got a convenient logging fishing town with a lot of white people. Also, you get it stays light for 24 hours a day for 5 months or whatever. And, you know, that's the problem is you can't have trees in an area that does that. Or at least in Alaska, you don't have trees in the area that does that.
Yeah, that's the thing that really threw me for a loop is there are places in Alaska that look like that. And there are places in Alaska where it stays light for that long and also dark for that long. But they are not the same, and they don't look the same. And so, yeah, that part didn't quite jive.
Yeah, and I mean, I forgave it. You know, right away. I mean, because it does, you know, it tracks as Alaska. And if you just forgive the part about being light, because it does stay light later in Ketchikan than it would in California. But it, you know, and in Anchorage, the actual Night Mute is roughly Anchorage or maybe a little bit north. So it doesn't get dark for very long. It's twilight for a long time during the middle of the summer, at the summer solstice. But there are still a couple hours of darkness every night.
Yeah.
But that does work on you. I mean, if you're not used to that, I could see you having insomnia problems. So that tracks just fine. And this is much better than the movie 30 Days of Night. Which, honestly, I couldn't get into, not just because it's a Josh Hartnett joint, but because it takes place in Barrow, which is a great setting for a vampire story, because that's a place that does get dark for a very, very long time in the wintertime. However, the main character, Josh Hartnett, was the sheriff of Barrow. And since Alaska doesn't have counties and therefore no sheriffs, and Barrow doesn't have its own thing, it's part of the North Slope Borough, it just some little fact-checking. That's all I want.
Yeah. And Barrow's not even Barrow anymore.
No. Can you say the name?
Nope.
Listener Susan said the name today, and I still confuse it with the similar name for muskox fiber that they make garments out of. I think that's called Kiviet. So anywho, insomnia. Takes place in Alaska. Well, let's call it Southeast Alaska. That's fine. From a plot perspective, this is a thriller. I thought this was a sort of a Pulp Fiction plot. Not the movie Pulp Fiction, but like actually like Travis McGee type Pulp Fiction, like Ed McBain kind of pulpy novels. Like kind of like a police procedural. Something like actually the Robin Williams character might write.
Yes.
So that would be kind of meta if they played on that. But in my opinion, the acting and direction made this such a great movie, even though the plot is pretty thin.
Yeah, it's really atmospheric in a way that the atmosphere impacts the movie way more than the plot.
Definitely.
And so it was fun to watch Al Pacino be not only just unlikable in a way that's pretty unusual, but borderline incompetent and really at the end of his rope. So yeah, I thought he did a great job. It was fascinating to watch, I thought.
Yeah, I thought Nolan didn't let him go full Al.
Yes, that is very true.
Like there's a couple times where you think he's going to say that somebody has great ass. pass, but he doesn't quite get there. A little bit. You can see the glint in his eye where he wants to go there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, especially early on before he's really hamming up the sleep deprivation.
Yes. But I think the hamming up sleep deprivation actually works.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, we see Hilary Swank as a police detective in Night Mute. And she does fine.
She's the obvious hero of the story from the very beginning.
And she's playing kind of that ingenue kind of role. She's playing the equivalent of Angelina Jolie's character in The Bone Collector, right?
Sure.
If Al Pacino was paralyzed in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have the really sticky take your dollar bill out and measure the footprints or whatever. Hey, I remember that scene at least, so there you go. There's something to that. But I thought the casting was really good, too. I liked a lot of actors in this movie.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's been so long since I've seen this movie. I had genuinely forgot one of the the really important driving parts of the plot early on in the movie.
Shall we just dive into the plot then?
Yeah.
In a small fishing town of Night Mute, Alaska, a 17-year-old Kay Connell is found murdered. LAPD detectives Will Dormer and Hap Eckhart are sent to assist the local police with their investigation, at the request of Police Chief Nyback, an old colleague of Dormer's. So, Dormer is Al Pacino, and Hap is Martin Donovan, who we know from all sorts of stuff. He's been in a lot of things. He also has a very Aaron Eckhart face.
Yes, he does.
But I think we would probably know him best from...
Was he in Weeds?
He was in Weeds. He was in Ant-Man. You know, the general Weeds Ant-Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Also, what is Hap short for? How do you get a name like Hap?
I have no idea.
Is it short for, like, Happopotamus? Happenstance?
Was there a time when people would actually name their kids Happy?
Possibly. I mean, Mr. Gilmore.
Oh, as a nickname, Hap or Haps is commonly short for Henry, Harry, Harold, or Harrison.
I did not know that. So Hap Ford?
Yeah.
Then we meet a young detective, Ellie Burr, played by Hilary Swank. Young Detective Burr is a fan of Dormer's. Dormer is famous for catching bad guys in L.A., apparently.
Real bad guys.
Yeah.
Serial killer type bad guys.
In detective school, she studied his cases. But just maybe a thing. So she's a little bit fawning when he shows up. Okay, she's a lot bit fawning when he shows up in town. And he seems to like the attention.
That's when he has that glint in his eye.
Exactly. And then they go to the hotel to check in. And the bar / restaurant is open for just a little bit longer. So he and Hap sit down.
No, they don't go to the hotel. He wants to get right to work.
Well, that's true. I'm sorry. I was going to try to figure a way to introduce Maura Tierney.
Yeah, well, he wants to go look at the case files and talk to the detectives. And then he wants to go brace the boyfriend at the school.
Yes. And see the body.
Yeah.
He doesn't really care as much as about the case files as he wants to actually get into it.
Yeah. But it's when he wants to go embarrass the boyfriend in front of his friends at school that he gets told that it's 10 o'clock.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, let's go. And then they have to explain to him, like, no, it's 10 o'clock at night. And that's the first inkling that, yeah, there's no real nighttime here in fictional Night Mute, Alaska, because it is super bright.
And again, to be fair, 10 p.m. is still pretty light out in Anchorage, too, so.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, sorry, we get to meet Maura Tierney. Anytime I get to meet Maura Tierney, I'm happy. And her performance here is solid. She's just a sort of a bit player.
She has one of the most authentic Alaskan lines in the whole movie towards the end.
Which it would be?
When she talks about there's only a couple reasons people end up in a place like Night Mute.
Yes. They were born there. Or they're running away from something.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't born there.
That's right. It's very true of many places in Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. The extradition costs money. So if you make it to Alaska, lots of places down in the lower 48 don't want you back for the amount of money it costs to send you back. So they go to the restaurant, and just as it's closing, and he talks with Hap. And this is where we learn that there is an internal affairs investigation going on in L.A. on Dormer for some sort of misconduct.
It sounds like their whole department.
Yeah. They managed to squeeze Hap into flipping. He's gonna go along with the investigation.
He's going to take a deal.
Yep. Take a deal and basically implicate Dormer. Even though he suggests that Dormer, he doesn't have any direct evidence Dormer did anything wrong.
He's not going to implicate Dormer, but Dormer knows that once they get him to flip, they'll start to squeeze him for anything.
Yeah.
Hap seems very naive about the fact that he's just going to cop to shaking down a couple drug dealers and get a slap on the wrist and it'll be fine. But Dormer is seeing the long game and he knows this is trouble.
Yes. He's unhappy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually, it's a good point of tension. I mean, this is actually an excellent twist in the story. We are going to spoil the story here. Because this is a lot more about the experience, I think, than it is the twists and turns.
Yeah. And it's a good conflict because they both have reasonable arguments. Nobody's being unreasonable, and they're on total opposite sides.
Sure. Everybody in this movie is fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, the characters are pretty well written. So we have that conflict between Hap and Dormer. And then we have this murder. And we go to the school where the 17-year-old goes to school. And we go to the best friend's house. The best friend is played by Catherine Isabel.
From Hannibal.
From Hannibal, yes. And a bunch of other stuff. Ginger snaps. But we also meet the boyfriend, who is played by Kyle Reese.
I forgot about that.
It's Jonathan Jackson as boyfriend Randy Sett. So it's pretty pedestrian. We brace the boyfriend. The best friend who had a falling out with the dead girl because she was maybe sleeping with the boyfriend and she's all flirty and trashy.
Yeah, this whole group of kids really seem like some real assholes.
Yeah, these are just like shithead teenagers, so.
Yeah, embroiled in high school drama.
Yes.
Eckhart and Dormer figure out pretty quickly that Kay was seeing somebody besides her boyfriend.
Yes.
Somebody who had more resources, like an adult.
Yeah, who would give her expensive gifts. Things you had to order away for.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to visit the scene of the crime, and after planning some, they find a backpack with some evidence in it, but instead spread the word through local media that they're looking for the backpack. So they're basically staking out the crime scene, hoping the murderer will come back for the evidence that they're still looking for. And it works. And so a shadowy figure goes into this cabin, and they think they've got him, but some dumbass local cops screw up, and we end up with Dormer and Eckhart sort of separated, chasing the bad guy. And during this whole thing in the fog, Dormer accidentally shoots and kills Hap, which I think is a brilliant little plot twist. Because he didn't do it on purpose. I mean, we know from watching it that he did not do it on purpose. And yet, I'm sorry. You give me a look like maybe he did it on purpose.
I don't know. He seemed to feel remorse about it.
Yeah, I don't think he did it on purpose. Because he seems to be scrambling.
Yeah. In the moment, it did look like an accident, but he did not react to it like it was an accident.
Yes. Well, because all the pieces are in his head. Well, first of all, why did he have to use his backup gun to shoot the guy? Did he drop it or something? Did I miss that part of it?
He emptied his magazine.
Ah, okay.
Because he was with another cop when they came to the shadowy figure who shot the other cop, I think in the leg.
Yes.
So there's already some trading of gunshots. So when he saw another figure, he dry-fired his gun and then immediately pulled it away and took out his backup piece.
So he shoots the who he thinks is the bad guy, turns out to be Hap. And the murderer sees this happen, and the murderer dashes off. So Dormer, because he has already been told by Hap that Hap is going to flip on him, once Hap dies basically in his arms, Dormer's like, ooh, I gotta make this look like the murderer killed him. That would solve a lot of problems for me.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to fairly extraordinary lengths to make this happen, including shooting a dead dog he finds in town.
Yeah, because he found the murderer's gun, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so he had his primary piece, his backup piece, and now he has a third gun that belongs to the murderer.
Turns out the cop that was hit, they did not find a bullet. It was a through-and-through shot. So right. As long as the murder weapon and the bullet that's in Hap match, then it's just fine. So it's a 9mm, it's a 9mm. Perfect.
You mean the murder of K?
What's that?
What murder are you talking about?
Well, K was bludgeoned to death, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so if it can be established that the gun that Dormer found belonged to the murder, the guy who shot the cop and also shot Hap, then everything's fine.
Yeah, because it wasn't a problem for Dormer until they did find the bullet.
Exactly, yes.
That's when he had to go find a dead dog to shoot.
Exactly, yeah, because he kept the .38 gun, but his backup gun he claimed was the murderer's gun. Am I wrong? Or maybe he didn't release that gun at all. Maybe there was no gun. He just hid the gun he found.
Yeah, I don't think he admitted to even having a backup piece.
Oh, no, not at all. But he didn't surrender his backup piece as the murderer's weapon, right?
Right. Yeah, no, he hung on to the murderer's weapon. That was a major plot point for most of the movie, where that thing moved around.
Yeah. So, if we have this tension going on, and then he starts to get phone calls from the murderer saying, hey, I know what you did. You made a mistake. I watched you made a mistake. Hey, I made a mistake. We can work together. We'll just pin it on the boyfriend.
Yeah, even Stevens. We can all be happy.
Yeah, everybody's happy. But no, Dormer has to find that there. It's cat and mouse. But it's hard to tell who's the cat and who's the mouse.
They trade off.
Yeah. So we find out that the bad guy is Robin Williams. And this is before 1 hour of photo, right? I think this is his first non-comedic role. I mean, there's other roles that had elements of like darkness, but this was his first straight role, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was in Awakenings before that. He was in Good Will Hunting before this.
Eh, okay. Maybe it's because this was the movie where he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily comedic, just he's not relying on his likability in this movie.
No, he's super creepy.
Yeah.
He's uncomfortably creepy in this movie.
But not 1 hour photo part of the overall plot creepy.
I've never seen 1 hour photo.
1 hour photos we're seeing, but him being creepy is a plot point. It's like a major thing. Yeah, it turns out that he and Dormer talk on this ferry, and he records the conversation. Robin Williams does. So now it's cat and mouse with Dormer as the mouse. Yada yada. I mean, we can yada yada all the way till it ends in a gunfight, really, with some peril.
Well, the insomnia, where the movie gets the title from, is portrayed really well, because Dormer has problems sleeping from the very beginning, but you know, as he gets mired further and further into this terrible situation that he's trying to get himself out of, the insomnia becomes worse and worse. I thought it was a great depiction of just how troubling it is when you can't sleep. I mean, I don't know if you've ever suffered from insomnia, but I really appreciated the way the movie portrayed this, about how when you're so tired but you can't sleep, how every little thing starts to bother you. I really liked how he thought it was super light in his room when Maura Tierney came in and was like, no, it's dark in here. And then she turned on the light and it was just like this blinding white light. The hardest part to watch was when he was finally like dozing off for the first time. And then the phone rang.
Yes.
It's like, ah, that's the shit that happens when you're having trouble sleeping.
Well, and the fact that the insomnia is part of the whole cat and mouse thing, because, you know, the Robin Williams character comes from a way of, you know, he's not a native of Nightmute. He also like a good Alaskan comes from elsewhere because he's hiding from something probably. And So he actually is like guiding Will along this whole thing. It's like, hey, you're probably having trouble sleeping, huh? Happened to me too when I first moved here. Oh, it's a bitch. You know, I once stayed up for 3 days or whatever. And so there's a little bit of mockery there, or maybe like it's mockery sort of based as like empathy, like right. Portrayed as empathy. And I've never had insomnia like you have, like my wife has, like our father has. But I have had several periods of time where I have been awake for like several days in a row without any sleep or with like 1 hour of sleep at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Bad shit happens during that time. I mean, I can think of one time in particular where I should not have been driving a car. Should not. But I did not have a choice. And you know, everything worked out okay. But it was dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, because you don't realize like how impaired you are and how much trouble you're having just thinking straight.
Oh, exactly. And just keeping it together, you know, all these little tricks you do, you know, he was chewing gum the whole movie. I thought that was interesting. Just trying to keep himself awake, you know. Like, I know that, like if you're driving for too long, like you're trying to make a big long road trip, always a dangerous time. You roll down the windows or you turn the AC on or whatever, so you make it cold, so you're not, you know, get lulled into sleep, or you have the music on real loud or whatever you need to do. But still, at a certain point, clinically, if you don't sleep for several days, you will become psychotic.
Yes.
So that's just a real thing. So I thought that was actually pretty great, this movie.
Yeah, because Dormer was just visibly deteriorating throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I thought, especially, there's a couple of foot chases. Not actually one major foot chase. But I didn't really believe Al Pacino could have kept up with Robin Williams. Just from an age thing. I could be wrong. I could be selling Al a little short. But he was hopping over fences pretty good. Although, as it turns out, neither of those actors were doing any of that running.
Yeah, that was pretty obvious.
Yeah, and then I liked the running over the logs. It pointed out that this was a logging town, which, of course, again, took me out of it for a little bit. But
yeah, it was a great visual, though.
It was. It was great. And when he fell in the water and, you know, was having a hard time finding a place to escape. Get back into the air. Yeah, that was great. So it all worked. I mean, I think that's the thing. The movie was pretty, you know, and I would recommend it to our mother. She's probably already seen it, but if she hasn't, she's a thriller fan. I think she would like it. And it's not such a, like I said, the plot itself isn't what I think recommends it. It's just the acting, I think, and the atmosphere, because it really is atmospheric.
Absolutely.
I mean, all the way to the end, the atmosphere is great. So do we want to talk about the end? Or, I mean, it's pretty simple, really.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, it's sort of a standard shootout ending, which is, it's more hacky than this movie really deserves, but it somehow pulls it off. And part of that is the final scene between De Niro and Hilary Swank.
Oh, you mean Pacino?
Yes, I do. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's really that final scene between Dormer and Burr. Swank and Pacino.
Her name was Burr?
Emily Burr, yes.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, just the.
Wasn't going to give up her shot. No, that's the other guy.
Talk less, smile more.
Ah.
Yeah, she, their final interaction really brought the whole movie home.
Well, that's the thing, is that we learn that Dormer, turns out, he's a bad cop. I mean, he it's actually an interesting, I mean, it's a fundamental quandary about, okay, if you have the ability to tip the scale to get a bad guy, a really bad guy, it's like you don't have enough to get him, but you've got some sort of thing you can do to break the rules, bend the rules, to put the real bad guy away. Can you justify it? Like, do the ends justify the means? I guess that's the major right. eternal struggle. Turns out he chose wrong or right, depending on his situation, I suppose. Like a child molester serial killer?
Right. I mean, regardless of whether it was the wrong thing or right thing to do, it was haunting him and eating away at him and really coloring everything that came after.
And just because he could hear the dogs in the distance barking, the IA guys, but since there was something for the dogs to find, that was, you're right, it was haunting him.
Yeah, I mean, he, as it turns out, he felt like he had compromised himself in a way that he was never going to recover from.
Yeah, he planted evidence that convicted the horrible guy. But he straight up planted evidence.
Yeah, but so once you see how it's not just the guilt of killing Hap, but it's the guilt of doing that and crossing the line that has been eating away at him for way longer than just the events that happened in Nightmare, that really brings everything into a much sharper focus. And you can tell he's a goner.
Oh, yeah.
Even before the shootout, he's a goner.
It's like the lie you tell, and then you have to tell another lie to cover that lie, and then the lies just never end. Except, now he has to shoot a dog. and somehow pocket shell casings and tamper with evidence, and yeah. Yeah, he's not only, he planted evidence on one scene, and now we watch him in another movie, manipulate evidence in a completely different murder.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's good at it.
Yes, yes.
Because he did it the second time when he was on like what, day 3 or 4 of no sleep.
Yes. Well, and he's sort of relying on the fact that he's better than all these, you know, bumbling people. The problem is, of course, the hero of the story, the young detective, who is smarter than the average bear.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the conflict of, oh, she's finding out that maybe her hero is got feet of clay. Also, screwing up an entire murder investigation. Irreparably. But that they don't lean on that part of it as much as the hero worship.
Right.
But, yeah, at the end, actually, he gets to tell her not to follow his footsteps. So it's got that happy ending everybody loves.
Sort of. I don't know about you, but that was unexpected for me. I did not expect it to end that way.
What did you expect it to be?
I expected him to just die.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was a deeper character than that. I think it was...
Yeah.
I mean, I think every little part of this movie was better than it had to be. I thought Maura Tierney didn't have to be so good, but she was. I thought Robin Williams' performance didn't have to be quite as subtle, but it was. I mean, Al Pacino didn't have to rein it in. He could have been a little crazier.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You said Nolan didn't let Pacino go full Pacino, but he didn't let Robin Williams go full Robin Williams either.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Like, everybody in this movie is really restrained in a super effective way.
Yeah.
Even the other cop, Nicky Catt, like, in another movie, you expected him to be a total incompetent douchebag. Because he kind of had that swagger. But as it turns out, he was just kind of a solid cop.
Yeah. Hey, he didn't particularly like the outsiders coming in, but he wasn't a bad cop. He was just, yeah. And he's Nicky Catt, has been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He was in Dazed and Confused and The Limey.
But the inciting incident, I had forgotten that that Pacino kills his partner.
Yeah.
I totally forgotten that. So when I was watching it this time and that happened, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, that's right.
Hamilton Eckhart. Harrison Eckhart.
Yeah. Because when he kills Hap, Hap thinks he did it on purpose.
Exactly. That's the thing.
And that is super, super troubling when you're watching it.
Oh, yeah. No, and I thought that scene was great because you're right. Because Hap totally thinks he did it on purpose. And Dorman is like, no, I didn't. I wouldn't have. I didn't know. Well.
Yeah. And that's such a great scene construction because as the audience, just the way it's shot and the sequence of events, like you're saying, like when you're watching it in real time, it doesn't cross your mind that he might have done it on purpose until Hap accuses him.
Exactly.
And that starts everything rolling. And that may have even been what gave Dormer the idea.
Exactly. Yeah. So right there, that's a good piece of acting between two competent actors.
Mm-hmm.
And a good piece of direction. Also, cinematography. They did a really good job, even though, like I said, I have a problem with the general taking shortcuts. Also, why would you name it a town that really exists?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to shoot the movie there.
Yeah, exactly. Because they didn't. They shot it mostly in British Columbia. There was like the scene where he's driving along that road and his car does a 360. That's actually the road to Valdez.
Yeah, it looked like an Alaskan highway.
Yeah. And then they flew over Columbia Glacier before they landed at Night Mute, which is like 2,000 miles away from Columbia Glacier. But oh, well. What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, that part jarred me a little bit because it did not make any sense for them to be flying over that glacier and then land in the forest.
Yeah, but oh well.
But yeah, I mean, it did make me nostalgic for all the time I spent in the Southeast doing work.
I haven't, you know, other than visiting our uncle who lives in Juneau, I really haven't traveled around that part of Alaska. I mean, I've, you know, driven on the highway a couple times. And so that gets you to Haines. But other than Juneau and Douglas area, I've never been to Ketchikan or Sitka, any of that stuff. Seems like it would be a day trip, honestly.
Yeah, Ketchikan's interesting because the airport is on an island and there's no bridge. So
so you have to take a boat?
Yeah, they have a ferry.
Really?
Twice an hour.
That's wild.
Back and forth. When it's busy, they have two going. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And then I've been on a ferry like from Ketchikan to Metlakatla, like the one where Pacino and Williams had their conversation. And it's both. I guess like most ferries, you know, some are walk-on passengers and then it has some spots on the deck for vehicles, but not many.
Well, especially in, you know, in that part of Alaska.
Yeah.
There's not, I mean, there's road, like Juneau has several miles of roads, but you don't have a lot of room to drive around any place.
No, you do not.
Also in Night Mute, in Bethel, you don't have a lot of room to drive around. You're better served by a couple of four-wheelers and snow machines than taking your Chevy Nova up there. But again, I had to consult with people who have lived in Bethel because I don't travel that kind of stuff.
So what's been your favorite portrayal of Alaska? Insomnia, The Last Winter, or...
Frozen Ground?
Yes, Frozen Ground.
Well, I love Frozen Ground just because it's filmed... A lot of it was filmed around Anchorage, but you know, that has its issues too. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, this was fine. This was better than that Steven Seagal movie On Deadly Ground, I think it was called, where when I worked at the, at a hotel and Steven Seagal was a guest there while he was shooting it, it was sort of a thing. He seems like a tremendous jackass. His people were tremendous jackasses. Although I did get to talk briefly with Kelly LeBrock. Don't hate her because she's beautiful.
No. Very nice. Was she a jackass?
No, she was, well, she was asking for his room. So, you know, whatever. And she was asking for his fake name room. So,
can you share what his fake name was?
I forget what his fake name was. It was, I think it was Chuck something. It was stupid. It would have been great if it had been Chuck Norris. But that was not it. So, yeah, so Insomnia, was it worth it with this time around?
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually better than I expected it to be. Because the first time around, it didn't really stick with me. I liked it okay, but it didn't stick with me as being a great movie. But watching it again, it's hard to believe it's already, what, 15 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It really holds up.
Yeah, I think so too. It's pretty great. So are we on to are we on to housekeeping? I'm all burpy.
Sure.
So this was the last week of school for Anchor Just School Children. And which means for our mother and I, it's the last week we could, I could hang out at her house on Monday and we could watch movies or whatever until we picked up Journey from school. Mm-hmm. So the last week we got to talking about Agatha Christie and we watched an Agatha Christie documentary. And this week we watched the first half of the 1974 Murder on the Orient Express. And then we watched the entire 2017 Murder on the Orient Express. And let me point out that Murder on the Orient Express is kind of a ridiculous story. It's fun. But if have you seen it? Are you familiar with the plot?
I've seen the most recent movie.
Okay. Did you like the most recent movie?
That is the only incarnation I've seen. I have no idea what the story was at all.
It's actually pretty true to the story. Although, honestly, yeah. In this, here's a spoiler for Murder on the Orient Express, people. Everybody did it.
Yeah, that's
the whole
funny.
Fun, is that every single person on this train killed the bad guy.
I did like it. It took me a while to, sorry for the turner phrase. It took me a while to get on board with what the movie was trying to do. Because the Hercule Poirot character in that movie was way over the top.
Well, but I would argue that he is not way over the top. Because in the documentary, one of the people in the documentary was David Suchet, I think, who has played Poirot in all of the PBS versions. So he's played Poirot dozens of times. And his Poirot and Albert Finney's Poirot in the 74 movie. And I had to ask our mom because she read all those books, although they were pretty disposable for her. They were like watching TV for her at the time when she was reading those books. But Poirot isn't necessarily super likable. He's a finicky little man.
Yeah, super arrogant and condescending.
Yeah. And I thought, actually, Kenneth Branagh's portrayal of him, even though his mustache was way more elaborate than I was used to, I thought his portrayal was actually pretty nuanced. I mean, he actually had a depth of character that Poirot doesn't necessarily have in other things.
I thought it was really good. It was really shocking. Like, it was not what I expected it to be, so it took me a while to sort of go with the flow.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. Yeah. It was,
me too.
Everybody did a good job, and they all got just enough to do. I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was really good.
Yep. Okay, the 74 movie has both Lauren Bacall as the Michelle Pfeiffer character and Ingrid Bergman as the maid character.
Oh.
So, wow. I mean, right there, that's a Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart kind of thing. So I thought, the Lauren Bacall character was pretty much, Michelle Pfeiffer did a great job of that character, because that character is supposed to be kind of annoying. Lauren Bacall was chewing gum for the entire time in 1974, which I thought was hilarious. And maybe because we A-B'd it, you know? We thought the plot of the 74, or the pacing of the 74 movie was so slow. That's why we were looking at the time saying, do we have time to watch the entire other movie? was sure enough. So, the characters weren't as deep. It was much more of a, like, Murder by Death did a great job of parodying that kind of movie.
Was that the same actor in Murder by Death who played Poirot?
Albert Finney?
No, the other dude.
David Suchet or whatever?
Yeah.
No, the Poirot character was like, I want to say like Dom DeLuise or something, right? No, it wasn't Dom DeLuise, but it was somebody.
James Coco.
Yes, James Coco, exactly. A Dom DeLuise type. You know, if we talk a little bit more about this, we could have listener Dr. Wonders accuse us of having an episode titled One Movie and talking exclusively about Murder by Death during that.
It's one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah. Well, Murder by Death is a fun movie. But yeah, no, so that's basically my housekeeping is, well, that and our town is going to hell. Literally a portal to hell opened today at Benson in Minnesota. A 4 foot in diameter circle that was at least 20 feet deep in the middle of the street.
What happened?
Yeah, it was like a sinkhole.
What happened?
Well, you're an engineer. It probably had to do with like a water main break or something. But what happened was a 4 foot hole appeared in the middle of the road that was 20 feet deep. So you could lose a motorcycle or children or, you know. So, yeah. It's crazy. Anyway, I overwhelmed the housekeeping. Any housekeeping on your end besides the camping stuff or in addition to the camping stuff?
No, I don't think so. It's been pretty quiet. We've been doing last week of school stuff. Yeah. Oh, I have a fun field trip story.
Excellent. Your second field trip?
I did not go on this one.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
This one.
I loved your first field trip story.
Oh, have you listened to it since?
Since you told it? No, yeah. I have not edited it yet. No.
I'm worried it might be a little much.
No, it's great. It's a great example. It's perfect. Although I did feel bad about injecting the term mask of normalcy.
That's fair.
Yeah, well, it's great. I love it.
So I went on that. See, I hate to complain about that first field trip because I think I was the only one who was miserable. The kids had a good time. That's fine. And the rest of the parents seemed to have a good time. But, so that was on a Thursday. So come around to the next Tuesday, there were two kindergarten classes that had a combined field trip. They went to the nature reserve just outside of Girdwood.
Oh, excellent.
So a serious trip, like on a bus and everything. And, that day it was really nice in town, but apparently the weather out in Girdwood is super shitty, like really cold and windy and sleet and stuff. So they were supposed to be on the bus and then they're supposed to get out there, grab a tour guide and have a driving tour of the little nature park there. And then like stop and eat a sack lunch that everybody brought and then come back after that. Well, they got there and that went fine. There were some parents on the bus along with the kids and the two kindergarten teachers. So they got to the park and my children's teacher went to go get the tour guide and came back. And the bus driver was like, no, everybody's got to get out. And she was like, oh, no, this is a driving tour. That's the tour guide's going to come on with us. And he said, no, I'm union. I have to take a break and I'm not allowed to have anybody on my bus when I'm not on the clock. So everybody has to get out.
Which is, I'm sure, all true.
Yeah, sure. So there was some miscommunication somewhere along the line. So both classes of... So this is probably about 55 and 6-year-old kids with maybe 6 or 7 parents and 2 teachers. They got kicked out and were left to fend for themselves in really crappy weather that nobody was prepared for.
And if memory serves, there are no enclosures. There's a bunch of, like, picnic tables, but there's not, like a pavilion you could go into.
No. Yeah, there was not. It was apparently a real shit show. So the bus driver took off. He drove to Girdwood and went and had lunch. So they walked around and they saw the animals. And the tour guide sounds like did the best job he could. It was super cold. The parents were pissed. And so the other kindergarten teacher, not our kids, decided she was going to just buy hot chocolate for everybody just to, you know, warm them up while they wait for the bus driver to come back.
Sure.
But apparently the dude making hot chocolate was like 100 years old and was making one hot chocolate at a time. So by the time the bus came back and they all had to climb back on, like only a fraction of the kids had even gotten any hot chocolate, and then they didn't have time to drink it and they'd throw them away. So then there were kids who were cranky because they couldn't drink their hot chocolate, and then there were kids who were upset because they never got any hot chocolate in the first place, and everybody was cold, and the parents were all pissed off because they weren't dressed for the weather and they were freezing, and then they came back.
So where did you hear this from, the teacher, or who did you hear this from?
Part of it from the Jennifer heard from the teacher, and then she got like the true skinny from one of the other parents via a series of angry text messages. Yeah, but then when we talked to our daughter, asked her how it was, she had a great time. She loved it.
Of course.
She was a little cold, but they got to see animals, and she was, you know, she got to hang out with her friends. And
yeah, got a bus ride.
It was an adventure, yeah.
Sure.
She said the bus ride was too long, but
yeah, well.
Other than that, she had a good time.
That is funny. Oh, I love that. A whole lot. Again, I love this whole thing. That's the best part of travel. Like, that's why I'm not particularly worried about going to San Diego, because, you know, as long as we actually survive, it'll be fine. Like, it's all the bumps in the road that make for the good stories.
Have you heard of a show called The Detour?
I don't think so.
I think one of the seasons takes place in Alaska, but I'm a few episodes into the first season. It's very funny.
It's a scripted show?
Yes.
Ah,
excellent. 22 minutes, so it's great. It's on Hulu. But
who's in it?
Natalie Zia?
Of course.
You never watched Justified?
I did not, no. I don't know why I'm whispering.
Justified is like the third or fourth best television show in the history of television.
I was going to say, that's just after The Shield and maybe ahead of The Wire.
It's ahead of The Wire. It's after The Shield. And I think it's going to be after The Americans.
Ah, okay. That's on my list too.
It's so good. But yeah, they had one more field trip that Jennifer did go on. Bowling. They went bowling.
At Center Bowl?
Yes.
Sweet. That was been fun. Bumpers up.
Yeah. First time my daughter ever bowled.
Yeah. Bowling is goofy fun.
She rolled an 84.
That's probably as good as I could do.
Yeah. Apparently they have a ramp for kids.
Yep.
So they don't have to throw the ball.
Yeah. Kids and handy capable people. Yeah. Ramp and bumpers, and you can, you know, do a lot of stuff. So I've got maybe it's a true confession, but remember when you asked me a couple weeks ago what I was going to do in that period between school getting out and summer camp starting? And I'm like, no problem, buddy. You'll be fine. Hey, don't worry about it.
Yeah, she's going to go to the Y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then when we looked into it after the second time you mentioned it.
I think my wife asked you second time.
Yes, the second time. And I'm like, oh, no, of course. And then I looked into it. I'm like, oh, shit, we are in trouble. We were scrambling because we were like, okay, the zoo, right? Oh, Alaska Club. Alaska Club was great. Look at Alaska Club. That's fine. Except Journey doesn't want to swim. Like, swimming is a part of every day. So that would not be good. So then we looked at the zoo. Zoo would be even better. Zoo is great. It's a little expensive. Like, it's quite expensive, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's great. However, they have no before or after, and it's only 9 to 3 or 9 to 3:30.
Yeah, there's so many camps that are like 9 to 1.
Yeah.
Or 9 to noon.
Yeah, that's not a camp.
Who does that help?
That's barely a lunch hour. Yeah. So
yeah.
So that, and so I mean, we were like looking at, oh shit, okay, so if I pay $100 a day and if I somehow wrangle our mother to maybe Kelly can drop her off at mom's house and mom can drop her off. When do you go to work again? I texted her mom and she did not text me back in a timely manner. So I knew the answer to that question. And then I had an epiphany, or just maybe your memory. I don't know. At this age, you take what you can get. Cowdy, who I babysat 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
She babysits kids. And so I texted her saying, hey, do you have availability? And she's like, for these 4 days? And she was like, yes. I said, well, okay, are you sure? And what are your rates? She goes, it's 4 days. It's like a play date. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, no, we are paying you money. There is no way we're not paying you money. But yeah, so Journey has got, today she went to Cowdy's house, and Cowdy's got 3 boys. But remember nice. Peter Michael, who tied her shoe at the Mermy ceremony, which was maybe the best picture like of that year? So today I got a picture of them playing Pokemon, the actual game with the Pokemon cards. I'm like,
oh, old school.
No, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I want Journey now to teach me how to play Pokemon so we can play Pokemon together. Because I thought teaching her how to play Pokemon would be frustrating for me. But she and Peter Michael played it for like 3 hours. No, sorry, an hour today. And she came up learning something about wanting to buy a Roblox game on the tablet or something so she can play Roblox, which is some sort of Minecrafty thing with lots of permutations and in-app purchases.
Of course.
So yeah, so it's that knock on wood, it's going to be delightful. Now, hopefully tomorrow, I will not get held over, so I can Kelly and I can go take her for her physical she needs for her to go to the Y, which is, you know, always going to be a little bit stressful, especially for Kelly, because we already know that they're going to say, oh, yeah, she's fat. You need to do something about that. And we'll be like, yes, have you seen us? We're, no. It's kind of a theme. There's a small chance I'll get ordered over, and Kelly's like, well, just tell them you can't do it. Like, that's not how being ordered works.
Ordered, yeah.
But, oh well. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.